It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me today, or whenever it is you're listening to this show. I appreciate it, and I'm glad that you're listening. We need to have a little revolution, a food revolution. A number of people have used that term, but I'm in the mood for using it today, so I will, because so many things can change by what we choose to eat or not eat every day. If you're feeling powerless, if you're feeling like what you do doesn't matter, think again, because it does, and you can make a big difference. And today we're going to talk to a number of people who are going to make it easy in different ways. So I'm always talking about wonderful, delicious, healthy plant foods, and sometimes you can go to some really expensive restaurants and spend lots of money today. There's some really fancy vegan restaurants out there that will take a lot of your money and serve up some incredible plates of food, beautiful and great tasting and healthy. On the other end of the spectrum, you can eat well and not spend very much money at all and do your job in helping save this planet, or at least saving humanity. I think the planet will take care of itself. So I want to bring on my first guest. Ellen Jaffe Jones is the Veg Coach. She is a personal trainer, running coach, author, and is a cooking instructor with the Cancer Project, a program of the prestigious Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. She spent 18 years in TV news as an investigative reporter, morning anchor, and producer for network affiliates around the country, winning 2 regional Emmys, among other awards. And she's the author of a new book, Eat Vegan on $4 a Day. I want to hear about this. Welcome, Ellen.
Thank you, Karen.
I'm looking forward to this because with your 18 years in TV news, I expect this is an easy little thing to do, talking on a show like this.
Piece of carrot cake.
Piece of carrot cake, exactly. Okay, so you have a really interesting story, and I love it when people find, what's the word I'm looking for? Find the answer. And so often it's with healthy food. And I'm looking at your website, vegcoach.com. There's lots of great pictures of you up there with a radiant smile, exuberant, and giving off lots of healthy energy. And that's appealing to people.
Thank you. I hope so.
Well, because, you know, so many people are just walking around and who was it? Thoreau, the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. People are running around in their own darkness. And I really believe that colorful fruits and vegetables really bring on the light.
I think so, and they really increase health, too. And the reason I wrote this book is just because I saw so many stories on the news that said you can't eat well on a budget. And I would see just tons of stories of women who must have weighed 300 pounds loading up their carts with Twinkies and macaroni and cheese, and then the reporter would stick the microphone in front of them and say, the interviewee would say, you know, you just can't eat well on a budget. And, you know, enough of pulling out my thick vegan hair, and I finally just wrote the book and spent about 2 years trying to shop it. And the big boys, the big publishers, didn't want a first-time author or somebody who wasn't already a celebrity.
Right.
And, you know, like it or not, television news doesn't qualify as being a celebrity quite yet. And but my publisher has told me that because we're already on a second printing after 3 months,
wow,
some of the big boys are kind of regretting that decision.
Yeah, well, good for you. This is such an important message, and I'm just excited with every vegan cookbook that comes out.
Well, thank you. And there really aren't, in fact, this was the only one at the time I started writing it, that actually dared to put a price with an individual recipe. And that was one of the challenges in getting it published. So we had to price it out to the nearest quarter, each recipe, so that we had a little bit of wiggle room, depending where you live, because we knew that people would say, well, that's not what it costs in my neighborhood. But I really wrote it just to prove that you can do it. And the biggest fun analogy I like to use is the serving of a 4-ounce cook serving of beans, which costs about a dime. If you go to your local big box store, it's about a nickel a dry ounce. And so 2 ounces cooks into 4 ounces, give or take. And when you compare that to an equal amount of hamburger meat, and we're talking 30% fat, the cheapest form of hamburger meat out there, that's about 60 cents. So, what, you know, I'm always about what's in it in your costs and what's in it in the pocketbook. And what you didn't mention is I spent 5 years as a financial consultant at Smith Barney. I was actually the number one market performer in my branch. So, you know, the numbers and the words and journalism, you know, just all came together after a number of years of eating this way. And in addition to being a personal trainer, I run 5K races and usually place in my age group in the area where I'm in, near Tampa, Florida. And I'm a high school cross-country girls coach, so for cross-country. And, you know, I just find that it really has enhanced my athletic performance. And I was a mess before I started eating this way. I almost died of a colon blockage, in addition to my mom, aunt, and both sisters having breast cancer. And that's just the beginning of the family tree that really has fallen completely apart due to many health issues.
Well, it's really an inspiring story, and I love that you've done so many different things and are finding a way to pull it all together to do something really positive, not only for yourself, but for so many people.
Well, thank you. And, you know, this really started as a hobby. It's one of those things, be careful what you wish for, because it, in my media background, I was also doing media consulting after I left Smith Barney, and I was doing that with my husband. He already had a very successful business for 20 years, and I set out to work with vegetarian and vegan doctors who had organizations like Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine.
We love them.
And, yes, and in years with working with them, I just met a lot of different people through that, including T. Colin Campbell, who, when I sat down to interview him for PCRM, he said, you know, if you ever write a book, I know you'll say exactly the same kinds of things that I would be saying, and he's one of the people, along with Dr. Barnard, who endorsed my book, which is really cool.
Yeah, they definitely are some of the pillars in this movement. And what I'm really hoping to see, I was talking to someone earlier about T. Colin Campbell, and it's taken him so long to really get the press and the recognition for all the great work that he's done. You know, now that he's got this movie out, Forks Over Knives, and I'll be talking to Gene Stone, who edited the book Forks Over Knives, later in the program. But he's done such great work, and for so many decades, he just didn't get... He wasn't heard, or the committees he worked with in government, you know, it's clear they weren't listening to the best information or didn't want to, and finally he's getting what he deserves, and I really hope that he lives a real long life so that he can see all the great changes that happen because of the things that he's done and what you're doing and what many people are doing to really change the culture of eating.
Right, and, you know, he has just been one of the many doctor heroes, along with Dr. Barnard and Dr. McDougall, who have been saying this message for a long time.
A long time.
And, you know, there are just some of us out there, like me, who said, you know, I'd love to wait for the studies, but when you understand there's no money in broccoli, then you understand you got to be your own investigative reporter and find out what works. And this, for me, has been the result of listening to these doctors for a long time and just putting it out there, comparing it to what has gone on in my family, which has just been so sad. So in my work as a financial consultant, I really understood, though, you can talk to big corporations and they don't care about saving the environment. But boy, you show them how they can save money by recycling and things like that, and all of a sudden, they're socially responsible. They're at the table. And so I've always believed that if you could show the folks at Walmart or Costco or these big box stores who I believe really need this information, if you can show them how they can save money, then they don't really necessarily care what they're eating.
Well, unfortunately, that's the angle. And I think some people are using this angle now in terms of health insurance, where big companies can save money on health insurance if their employees are eating better.
Right. And I've already been invited to speak at different corporations, and the employees actually get credit for coming to hear me speak. So if they come to so many speeches or do so many different activities, they get a reduction on their insurance premiums. So, you know, it's kind of cool to see that happen, you know, just little by little, and just living my life as I do, trying to be a good role model for other people to see is just really interesting. The St. Petersburg Times was just over here this week taking pictures for the cover of a magazine supplement they'll be running in advance of our Tampa Bay Vegetarian Festival. And they had me, well, I can't tell you exactly what they did, but we had a lot of vegetables surrounding my head, and they had me flex my biceps to show my muscles.
Okay.
Just this whole message that, yes, vegetables actually enhance your athletic performance. You know, it's the image has always been, oh, you're a weakling because you just eat vegetables. Well, not.
Well, we're starting, fortunately, to see a lot more athletes moving over and finding that they're having better performance and better recovery, which just seems to be a real key thing with sports.
Right, and I ran my very first marathon last year.
Woo!
And, you know, that was something I could have never done as a youngster. And I like to joke part of it is just showing up at my age. But really, not getting injured is the key thing. And I find when you're not eating meat, you don't have the joint inflammation that you often get with that. And I've seen publications like Arthritis Today even saying you should avoid meat if you're trying to avoid inflammation.
Wow, isn't that something?
Yeah, we're really coming full circle with a lot of this as we progress further. And the key to being athletic as you age is not getting injured, because I see so many people in my age group, we have five-year increments in running, and they just aren't showing up anymore.
Mm. Well, that's better for you.
Oh, I guess.
win all those prizes. So
it's just about finishing, you know. I've always said that it's not about the winning. It's just about showing up and finishing.
What was it like for you running your first marathon?
Terribly exhausting, only in that, you know, I did it in Palm Beach, Florida, and even in the winter months, it's
hot.
Pretty warm here, yeah. And also on concrete. I try not to run on concrete because I don't think humans were particularly designed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the ways that runners in particular get injured, either through their feet or their knees. So that part of it was a little difficult, but I was just so glad to finish. For me, it was a real big milestone because I'd been training for it for about a year and a half. I had done five half marathons up to that point. And again, I have three daughters, and chances are one of us will have the breast cancer gene and potentially get breast cancer. So anything I can do to be a good role model for them is really a part of what I'm doing, too.
You know, it's an interesting thing about the genes and how many people use genes almost as an excuse, saying that, you know, there's nothing I can do, it's in my genes.
Right.
And we know that's not true.
Yes, genes take a trigger, and part of it is what you're putting in your mouth and what you're doing on a daily basis in terms of your physical activity, and part of it, I believe, is the mindset, too. And that has certainly borne out in the different situations I've seen throughout my life.
There are some great pictures of you on your website, the before and after. And I love it. People love that because we love personal stories. And, you know, everybody likes to see someone who has succeeded in something that so many people are challenged with. So were there any things that were particularly difficult for you when you were transitioning or losing weight?
Well, The first time I really started eating more plants was when my sister got breast cancer the second time. It was the same year I almost died of a colon blockage. And I read all 5 books on fiber because that's about all there was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, gradually transitioned. And then when I went to work at Smith Barney, we had a lot of free lunches and dinners from the mutual fund and insurance companies and steak dinners at Morton's. And, you know, I had my little McDougal cups under my desk, but it just wasn't enough. And you can see that before picture, I really ballooned up in that 5 years, close to 150 pounds, which on a 5'3" frame wasn't very cool. And so when we moved to Florida, Atkins was enjoying a resurgence.
Oh.
And I even remember reading a story in the New York Times that was called What If It's a Big Fat Lie, and it said the science had changed. And what I later came to find is that it wasn't the science that had changed, it was just the marketing. And in that 1 year that I transitioned from a vegan diet to doing Atkins, and it really wasn't a healthy vegan diet, as I said, it was mostly like pizza lunches and, you know, trying to scrape off the cheese and get an occasional salad. It went from 130 to 203. So it was sort of the movie supersized me just over the period of a year. And it stayed up there until I came off of that about 3 years later, when I was really able to move to Florida and again found myself in the emergency room. They wanted to do an immediate hysterectomy because I had some hemorrhaging fibroids.
Wow.
And my OB got on the phone and said, Ellen, go back to your plant-based diet and call me in the morning. And that saved my life. Six months later, all signs of the fibroids were gone. I had lost a significant amount of weight, and my husband, who was also skeptical, was just amazed that, you know, I wasn't getting hot flashes anymore, and I never needed the hysterectomy.
That's a great story, and thank your doctor. Boy, what a world this would be if more doctors said, go on a plant-based diet and call me in the morning. I love that.
Yep, my hero.
Okay, I want to get back to eating vegan on $4 a day because I want to know more about this, and I love how you talk about the cost of beans and hamburger, but certainly at the supermarket there's a big difference, but there's also costs that we don't see that we're paying for in our tax dollars, and we don't see the subsidies that go into meat and dairy products. We're paying for them, not at the supermarket. So those cost differentials that you gave don't even take those things into consideration.
Well, in my book, I look at varying degrees of costs, and one of them is certainly the advertising subsidies that are in the USDA federal checkoff program. And interestingly enough, as part of my media consulting, we did work for the National Watermelon Promotion Board. And in my book, the latest figures I have there show that $1.6 million went to them, and that would be like every time you buy a watermelon, a few pennies go into an advertising budget. Well, lo and behold, at the top of that food chain, you have dairy products at $281 million. Fluid milk is a whole separate category. That's at $107 million, and then beef is under that at $79 million, compared to $1.6 million for watermelons. And suffice it to say that broccoli doesn't even make that list. So when I say in my book, you know, there's no money in broccoli, where's the broccoli lobby, the broccoli board? You know, you don't see any ads that say beans that are good for the hearts and other parts. It just isn't quite there yet. So those are statistics that really focus in on where the advertising dollars go toward. And then there's the whole part that I talk about is, you know, whether you pay for it, I pay for it, our insurance companies pay for it, or the government pays for the cost of our bypass surgery, it still is unsustainable. We can't keep paying for preventable diseases. And I really see this as one of the big things that could cause our economy and the global economy to come crashing down in fairly short order if we don't get our health under control. As one of the slides in my presentation says, you know, in 10 years we may all be vegan whether we want to or not.
That's
just
right.
By a matter of survival.
That's right.
Who's going to be left surviving? And I don't know if you've seen the stories that have been proliferating the news this week about that medications are in short supply. Life-saving
medication. Read that a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if we can't get the medication we need, what really is left?
Broccoli.
Broccoli.
Collards, kale, that's what's left.
Absolutely.
I know, but it's a pretty scary thing. There's a lot of scary things going on out there. But, you know, we have to stay joyful and stay on the path and eat our beans.
Absolutely, because if you eat, and here's the thing financially, if you make your protein source, your main protein source, be beans, then you save so much money that you are able to buy things that might cost a little more, like the fruits and vegetables. And in my book, I actually costed out a meal plan for a week just to show that you could do it on $4 a day. Mm-hmm. And even one of the days comes in under at $3 a day.
Whoa.
And Dr. John McDougall had been writing this for years. I saw it in a newsletter about 4 or 5 years ago, and that's one of the things that really ignited this idea to actually do the numbers and the math and make sure that it could be done. And interestingly enough, I'm on Facebook and Twitter and all the social media sites, and I'm hearing from people that they are doing this over the course of a month just to prove that you can do it.
Really?
That
okay.
They're surprised that it actually is working.
Has
so
anybody done
cool.
it? Has anybody done it in New York City or Northern California?
You know, I'd have to look up the specific places. Facebook is like this.
Food is so expensive in those places.
Tape, and I just sort of saw it go by, and I thought, wow, that's really cool. But it seems to me it was a blogger who had, like, her whole family do this because
wow.
everybody was so skeptical.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I hope, you know, you talk about the revolution. I mean, I think that's where it's going to be. But again, when you were using beans as the course, as the main course and the crux of your protein, then you just save so much money. In fact, I have several slides like hamburger meat. We talked about it being 60 cents for a quarter pounder. Tenderloin, the last time I priced it out, was 85 cents an ounce. So 4 ounces of that
mm-hmm.
is about $3.40. And then if you have 8 ounces of that, that's $6.80. 16 ounces, what you'd get at a restaurant, is $13.60 for beef tenderloin, and those are just Walmart prices. That is not a restaurant charge.
Well, I think one of the tricks here is to get people in the kitchen, because I'm always encouraging people to find their kitchen. Many people don't know where it is or how to use it, but certainly not just to save money, but to make healthier food. It's best that we make it at home and make it ourselves, because when we're buying fast food and processed food and prepared food, so often they have my three favorite ingredients, sugar, fat, and salt. And we do so much better when we make foods at home.
Absolutely, and it really incorporates the family in the cooking and food preparation process. I mean, even if you're having your kids just toss the berries in a blender for a smoothie, it's just a great way to give them control over food, which can often become a war zone in families. So any way you can incorporate the kids, I have a number of recipes in the book that are really set up to do that, so that if they like olives and you don't, you know, you just put it out on the table and they can add it to their burrito, you know, that kind of stuff
mm-hmm.
to really make them feel a part of the process. Growing a garden is great also for kids. My kids, I like to brag that at the age of 3, they were the only ones on the nursery school field trip when the farmer held up the green thing and said, "What's this?" And they said, "Kale."
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, he said, "You're the first kids who didn't say spinach." So because we had kale growing in our garden and
sure.
cherry tomatoes that would reseed themselves. And if you can't grow a garden, I have in the book information about how to find a local farm near you, which is just as equally effective with kids, is so that they know that food comes from the ground and not from a plastic wrapper at the grocery store.
It sounds really good. And, you know, I encourage everyone to pick up the book and try to do it. Try to eat on $4 a day. And even if you don't succeed, you're going to be all the better for it.
Well, one of the things I say, too, is that these recipes represent the cheapest plant-based recipes and menus on the planet. So even if the numbers don't correlate exactly to your Walmart or your grocery store, there's still going to be the cheapest recipes that you can find out there. And one of the things, I have a whole chapter on salads and another chapter on salad dressings that are not that complicated to make,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's important if people are going to eat more greens that they find a dressing that they really love. And for me, I love eating a ginormous salad at lunch and at dinner because there's so much absorbable calcium calcium and other vitamins and nutrients in the greens, that again, it's really important to find a dressing that you can live with. And
yeah,
that,
well,
know, if you make it in bulk, it's there in the fridge, and you can use it all week if you want to.
Right. Well, once you've kind of come over to the other side, all like the veil is lifted, and you see all of these great foods and really enjoy them. Do you have? Is there a favorite recipe in this book that you have?
Well, there are several, of course, but one of the recipes that provides the most amusement is the chocolate surprise cake, because I have a picture of it up on my Facebook page, and you know, people can never guess what's in it when they see the end result. And when I do my slideshows also in presentations, I'll show the picture of the end result first and make the audience guess what's in it. And it's just got all kinds of yummy vegetables that you would never figure are in there, like pineapple, zucchini, carrots, just lots of green things that when you put them in a blender, they just kind of all dissolve. And, you know, you put a lot of dates in it, and you've got some natural sweetener.
Right.
And
great.
You're good to go. And you don't have to put the icing on it, only if you want to. But that's kind of a fun one. It's very moist. Chocolate mousse also is another one to sneak in. I love these recipes that people have no idea that they're vegan. There's a sweet potato muffin recipe that I had a woman in my cancer project cooking class. She lost 120 pounds in 8 months.
Wow.
Not even trying, just eating this food. She needed to lose the weight. And this was about 6 years ago. She had multiple myeloma, was not given very long to live. And I just heard from her. She's doing great. Her blood work is still great, and she's
wow.
still a raving vegan.
That's great.
But she made these sweet potato muffins and came back one day and told me, she said, the whole church of 150 people, they were eating vegan and they didn't even know it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Well, you know, most of the food that we make, no one can tell if you don't tell them. Ellen, we've come to the end of this segment, and I wanted to thank you for joining me today. Ellen Jaffe Jones, the Veg Coach. Your website is vegcoach.com. And I wish you a lot of success with Eat Vegan on $4 a Day.
Thank you so much, Karen. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. We're going to take a short break and be back with Gene Stone, the editor of the book Forks Over Knives. Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. I've got Gene Stone here in the studio with me, and he is the editor of a new book that came out called Forks Over Knives. And he's the author of the international bestseller The Secrets of People Who Never Get Sick, and the co-author with Rip Esselstyn of The Engine 2 Diet. Stone, who has written or ghostwritten more than 30 books and numerous magazine articles, lives in New York and follows a plant-based diet. Thank you for joining me, Gene.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, you've written over more than 30 books.
I have.
How do you do that?
How do I write that many books? Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure. You know, if you ever actually saw me, I mean, I don't know how many of your listeners are writers, but writing is odd. I mean, I think if you actually saw a writer, you wouldn't really see any. It seems to me all I do is walk around, play with a cat, eat, you know, and then somehow at some point I write a little bit, and then it turns out to be a book.
Now, it says you follow a plant-based diet. Did you come on to that on your own, or was it something you were writing that you...
Well, I really believe in participatory journalism, so whatever I'm writing about, I tend to do. I've been a vegetarian since, you know, I don't know, 1932 or something.
Whoa.
Well, maybe not that long.
I don't think so.
But a long time. But when then I met Rip Esselstyn, Rip is the vegan or the plant-based firefighter from Austin, Texas, who wrote with me The Engine 2 Diet. His father's Caldwell Esselstyn, who is the author of Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease, which is the book that so influenced President Clinton and helped him become a vegan. So when I met Rip, and I was just a vegetarian, he goes, wow, because Rip's like the most excitable, happy guy I've ever met, probably because he eats nothing but plants.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes, wow, this is so cool. And I go, yeah. He goes, so what do you eat? And I said, well, you know, I still have dairy. And he goes, oh, man, no. And so I said, well, maybe to write this book, I should go all plant-based. And he said, yeah, do that. So I went all plant-based. And then, like many people, my cholesterol level went from, I don't know, like 240 to 180. My HDL went up. My LDL went down. My triglycerides went down. And all of a sudden, my doctor's going, did you start taking statins without telling me? And I'm going, no, I just actually started eating plants. And he goes, no, seriously. And I go, no, I mean, seriously, I started eating plants. He goes, no, come on, seriously.
Oh, please.
And he wouldn't believe me. So he actually, when I was in his office last time, so I go in for, you know, checkup. He said, well, let's just do another lipid test now. So he did, and then it came back, and I was 170. And I come from a family where 400 is normal.
Right.
And he goes, I don't understand this. You know, you're trying to tell me this is coming from, what do you call it, plants? And look, my doctor's a great guy, and I really love him. I'm not knocking doctors, but... as you know, it can be a surprise to Western doctors sometimes that plants and diet can have such an important effect on your health.
Well, what's surprising me is that your doctor was so surprised today, or I don't know how many, it was just a few years ago, I imagine.
No, this was just fairly recently, and the issue is that, as you know, most doctors aren't trained in nutrition. They're trained in everything but, and my doctor, who is, as I say, I love my doctor. He is a great, sympathetic, wonderful guy, but he hasn't really been trained that way, and he works, you know, at NYU, and it's very allopathic and Western and
right.
all about.
Has he read your books now?
I give him my books. I can't swear that he's read them. I suppose I could test them next time.
That's
What's
right.
on page 84?
Well, there are more doctors that are more knowledgeable today about nutrition, and I went to a cardiologist maybe about a year ago. He was younger, so maybe that's why he was familiar with it. But still, he had a list of things you do to prevent heart disease, and although eating fruits and vegetables was at the top of the list, he just kind of like threw it off and then jumped right to statins.
Right. Well, as you know also, there's not a lot of money in plants and vegetables.
Oh, really?
And it's not that doctors are necessarily corrupt, because I think most of them are terrific, and they go into medicine because they care about health and they care about helping people. But the system is not necessarily geared toward prevention. It's not geared toward broccoli. It's not geared toward Swiss chard. You know, we have this enormous pharmacological industry that is trying to get all of us to take drugs. And again, some of those drugs have saved lives.
Absolutely.
You know, there's no question that some of these drugs, we wouldn't have a society functioning if it weren't for some of these drugs. It's just that, do we all need to be on all drugs all the time? I don't know.
Well, I think also, you know, I'm sure there are things that we need from the pharmaceutical industry. There are all kinds of mysteries that affect our health that boggle the mind. But if everyone was eating a healthy plant-based diet, I think it would be amazing where the medical industry and the pharmaceutical industry would be today. I mean, we would be curing the real mysteries and solving really serious problems that we don't even look at today.
And I think that's what a lot of Forks Over Knives, which is the documentary that I wrote the accompanying book to, that's basically what it's trying to say to people, is that health is obviously extremely important, but if you looked at health from this particular perspective yet, and while in the world you and I occupy, of course we have. As you probably know, 98% of the country probably still doesn't think of the fact that their dinner was filled with hamburger, cheese, meat, animal protein, and they don't feel good afterwards. Like, oh, there's a connection. That's really interesting. And what Forks Over Knives does, I think, in the movie, very graphically, and I think, well, very well, is show some of these connections, which is why I think we're all trying to buy 10 copies of Forks Over Knives and give them to each other and give them to other people. Have you seen the documentary?
I have.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Did you like it?
I did. I mean, I loved Dr. Campbell and Dr. Esselstyn, and, you know, just to see them telling their story and having people watch it, I love that.
Well, for Essie, Dr. Esselstyn, the wonderful thing is that he started this back in 1985, and so that's, what, 26 years ago? And when he started it, people kind of laughed at him. They thought, well, this is wacky. And he kept doing it and kept doing it, and even published his book, Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease, back maybe 5 or 6 years ago. It didn't really go anywhere. And in the last 2 years or so, all of a sudden, boom.
What do you think it is? Is it just this, like, critical mass or something like that?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer. I do think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's real. In other words, if this were just some silly fad, it would have passed away. But it hasn't, because it is real.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that part of it, frankly, is the economy and the fact that people can't afford to have the kind of health care that the economy wants them to have. People can't pay out the way they could pay out before. Insurance is so expensive. Employers are worried about their health, and they're worried about their employees' health. So all of a sudden, I think people are looking around, is there a way that I can actually stay healthy and spend less money than I've been spending, and
yeah.
not the way the it normally works, which is I spend more money, I go to the hospital, I have co-pays. And
no,
I have
it's nuts.
You know.
It's clearly really
yeah.
nuts. And so your book has been on the New York Times bestseller list.
It's number one this weekend.
Now, that's hot.
It's really cool.
Now, who's buying the book?
Well, it looks like everybody. Actually, you know, we don't track the sales per se. We have no idea. All we know is that the Times list is composed of lots of different bookstores across the country, and the fact that it's number one means that in all these different bookstores, people are actually lining up to buy the book. And that is, I have to say, a surprise. The first printing was, I don't know, maybe about 20,000 copies.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe 2 months later, we now have over, I think it's like 85 or 90,000 in print.
Wow.
And it just keeps going up, not down. So
right.
this is good.
Well, this book, it's kind of like a nice, simple introduction, hits all the points.
Exactly.
And, you know, if it might whet your appetite and want to learn more about one particular issue, but it's really good. And then you have all these different contributors with their recipes. And the one obvious missing ingredient, other than animal products, mm-hmm. is oil.
Oh, oil. Yes, there's the oil question. You know, it's funny. In the plant-based world,
mm-hmm.
some of the plant-based people don't even like the word vegan. The vegan
yeah,
people go, why
oh,
don't you like the word plant-based?
Yeah.
Then there's the oil and the non-oil people. I'm a big tent kind of guy. You know, I'm just happy to see anybody not eating animals.
Right, me
because,
too.
You know, I'm very much animal rights and very much thinking that the less animal protein you eat, the better. But if I feel very comfortable. If I can get someone just to switch from eating meat every night to eating it just once a week, I feel terrific.
That's right.
But there are other people who are a little more pure. The people who are involved with Forks Over Knives are plant-based people who also are people who don't feel that oil is a healthy thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not heart healthy. In fact, they feel it's heart unhealthy. Their point is that it is a processed food. Olives are great. Avocados are great.
Mm-hmm.
But then to throw away all that's good about the olive or the avocado and press it down and make oil out of it, that's not so great.
Right. And a lot of people are really surprised to hear that.
Yeah, because...
The Mediterranean diet,
and olive oil is so healthy. And then there's also an olive oil industry that spends a lot of money promoting this. It is actually... Of all the things that come up in talking about Forks Over Knives, that is actually probably the one thing that people are most surprised by.
Mm-hmm.
When you say, oh, I'm a plant-based guy, and people go, yeah, I've heard of that. Or you say, I don't have any animal protein, then they always want to know about, wasn't yogurt healthy? And then you go into the dairy thing. But then once you get to oil, I find that for a lot of people, that's just like they don't go any further.
Yeah.
And so I say, look, fine. You know, if you want to have a plant-based diet and you want to include oil, try it. You know. Maybe it would be fun, however, to spend, let's just say, 2 to 3 weeks and take oil out of your diet and see what happens. What I've been doing with some of my friends who who have cholesterol at home testing kits
yes.
is try it. Is, you know, spend 2 weeks without oil and see what happens. And most of these people, not all of them, because it's funny how you never know. People have odd metabolisms and systems. But I would say for the majority... Things are good.
I'm one of those people with
yeah,
odd metabolisms. me and cholesterol, it's been a strange,
oh, yeah?
strange history.
Is your cholesterol normally high?
Yeah, I haven't had it tested recently, but it can be around 200 or 240 oh. sometimes, and
yeah.
then other times it's 150. So it
well, you know, I'm a little bit like you.
It moves
mine
around.
Mine jumps around a lot. But, you know, there's been a whole spate of studies that have showed that it may actually not be your cholesterol level. It's the size of your cholesterol molecule. And people that have large cholesterol
mm-hmm.
molecules can also have high cholesterol levels and be okay because that cholesterol molecule is so big it doesn't lodge anywhere in your system.
Right.
But if you have little tiny cholesterol molecules and then just stick it in anywhere, then you're really stuck.
Yeah, I had heard something about that, and I'm going for it.
Yeah, me too, because I like it.
I like that theory.
Right.
But yeah, I have well, I don't want to go into my history. It's not about me. But it's good to know. I mean, it just shows that there are so many things that we don't know.
Yes.
But the thing that we do know, you know, cholesterol is an indication of a risk. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean anything. There are people with low cholesterol that have had heart attacks. There are people
Absolutely.
That have low cholesterol that have their arteries are coated with gunk.
Mm-hmm. My parents, both of them had cholesterol levels around 350 to 400, and neither of them ever had any heart problems. Now, that's unusual. I'm not mm-hmm. saying that's what you want, but as you're right in that you can't say that every single person system is exactly like everybody else's. There's no question that for the most part, if you have a low cholesterol, you're probably going to be heart disease free, and that's part of what Colin talks about in the mm-hmm. China study. It's part of what Dr. Esselstyn talks about in his books and in his practice. In fact, he's never seen anybody with a cholesterol level of under 150 have heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean, however, because this is what happened to me the first time. I remember for years people didn't really talk about cholesterol. I remember the first time I got tested, and the nurse, who meant well, but she comes out of the office. She goes, "Oh my God, your cholesterol level is 350. You're going to die." Thanks.
What about? Can you have too low cholesterol? I've heard people say their doctors have told them their cholesterol is too low.
Yeah, I've heard people say their doctors have said that, but I have actually never run into, I've never read anything that says there's such a thing as
mm-hmm.
cholesterol levels
yeah,
too
I
low.
Yeah, I haven't either.
So I don't think it's true. I think sometimes doctors just say things.
I remember reading in Dr. Campbell's China study that in China, the range, when he was studying it, was around 90 to 150.
Yeah.
Their high was 150.
Right.
I know that's changed. Because mm-hmm. China is changing, and they want to be just like us.
Mm-hmm.
And
they want to eat
so
like us. They want to have burgers. They want to have cheese. They
they've
want all
got
that
diabetes
stuff.
Problems yeah. more yeah. than ever now, and it's really, really sad.
Yeah.
Is Forks Over Knives going international?
Yes, absolutely. Brian Wendell, who is the producer and the guy who really, his heart has been in this from the beginning, and he's the one who really made all of this happen. For up to Brian, every country in the world would have a screening of Forks Over Knives, and I don't care what language that is. He would like to be happy to translate into, what are there, like 4,000 languages?
I don't know. Sure, all I know is I have a $5 vegan guide to the International Vegan Passport, where
really?
It has 36 languages in it on what vegans eat.
Have you ever have you gone overseas and tried to eat plant-based?
I've lived in France as a vegan for 4 years.
But don't they look down on, I mean, because that's a cheese.
Oh, I know. I traveled all over the world, and I personally haven't had a problem. But, you know, I think it's all in I'm pointing to my head. I think
yes,
it's
you
all
are.
In the mind. But in France, it was really funny. I lived in the south of France where they love fresh vegetables.
Right.
It's true they saute everything in olive oil.
They certainly do.
Unless you ask for légumes au vapeur, which is steamed. The only time I had a problem was in Lyon, in one of the most famous restaurants in Lyon. I gave them 2 weeks' notice, and they said it would be no problem. And I gave them 2 days' notice, and they said it would be no problem. And I walked in, and it was a disaster.
Right.
But most chefs were challenged, and that was 15 years ago, and I think they've gotten a lot better since then.
I'm going to Paris, actually, in November, and I'm thinking, am I going to have to pack a lot of power bars with me? Or
No, because even though they do eat a lot of meat and cheese, they do eat a lot of fresh vegetables, and
right.
you can get fabulous salads
mm-hmm.
anywhere.
Okay.
And there's also a lot of Lebanese restaurants in Paris.
Yeah.
Does have olive oil
it
in a lot of them.
Well, I actually am not one of the... I decided, because again, I really encourage everybody to figure out what works best for them.
Right.
For me, I'm pretty much all plant-based, but I have had an egg or two in the last year because I was in the middle of America traveling and starving, and I just served eggs, and I was
mm-hmm.
so hungry, I thought, well, darn, I'm going to have to do this, or else I'm going to be really unhappy. I would say I'm 99%. So what Rip says, Rip Esselstyn,
mm-hmm.
he has a theory that he is plant perfect because that's just what he can get away with. But very few people can be plant perfect. If you can be plant strong, that's pretty good. And plant strong means you're doing 95.
Right.
You
Absolutely.
Know, you know, but again, if you can just be plant experimental when you start, the idea isn't to make people feel guilty or, you know, let's say you really want to become a vegan and you work hard at it, then you have a hamburger and you feel so guilty that you never, like, be vegan again because it's really nice to be forgiving. And if
mm-hmm.
I have a friend who's struggling with a plant-based diet and admits to me that he had a piece of meat,
And something that I always say, no matter what you eat, when you eat it, enjoy it, and
right.
don't eat guilt while you're eating, because that's
right.
going to do more damage than right. anything else.
Yeah, exactly. So as far as oil goes, I certainly cut oil out of my diet from what I used to have, because I hadn't realized how much oil, I don't think most people realize,
no,
the amount
don't.
Of oil you put into your system, whether
right.
it's just salad dressing or something sauteed, mm-hmm. or, you know, you look at, just, I was having, I love artichoke hearts, so I never sort of thought about the fact that they're packed in pure olive
oh,
oil.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Or olives, and so they're packed in olive oil, so I
right.
wasn't just having the olive. And I realized I was having a lot of olive oil, so what I've done is I've cut back. I probably have a tenth of what I used to have. But, you know,
right.
a little olive oil gets into my system.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, you're
yeah.
okay.
I feel okay about it.
I think you know. For people that have extreme heart disease and their doctors have given them a
right.
death sentence, definitely avoiding all oils and following Dr. Esselstyn's recipes is the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But for most of us,
yeah.
definitely eliminating the animal foods, reducing animal food and dairy yeah. is a good thing. And then, you know, after that, you right. can pick your own.
And the other issue for me is I came into this through Rip and his father and through health. I've sort of switched over to the animal rights kind of thing. Because
it happens
you
to
start,
the best of us.
Man,
yeah.
you start seeing these films and you start talking to
I
these
know.
People and
yeah.
all of a sudden you realize, oh, what are we doing? So I've gotten to know Gene Bauer, who runs Farm mm-hmm. Sanctuary. He's terrific. He's one of the people featured in Forks Over Knives.
Yep.
And also this amazing 27-year-old guy named Nathan Runkle.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Mercy for
yep.
Animals. I mean, dude is like, you know, 27 and for
yeah,
10 years
huge.
Has been running one of the most
I
effective
very,
animal rights
yeah.
groups in the country.
Yeah, yeah, amazing. Well, we need more of those people.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you wrote a book called The Secrets of People Who Never Get Sick.
I did. That's a book, actually. Most of what I write is ghostwritten for other people. That's a book I wrote under my own name. I've written probably about 8 or 9 ghost books for doctors and health professionals, and obviously after all these years, I don't think I know that much, but I think I knew enough to write a book about what I've learned.
Okay, did you write this once you were on a plant diet?
Yes.
Okay.
I do have chicken soup in there, though, which makes a lot of my plant-based friends
angry.
Unhappy. But the question there is simply that, does chicken soup work? And the issue that I pose is that it actually does seem to have
yeah.
some effectiveness, but not because of the chicken. It's the
oh.
soup. It's the hot liquid
okay.
combined with all the vegetables and the spices. That's probably what makes
it's
it work.
It's not histamine
but people
or
don't,
something.
It's not
I've
something
heard
in
about.
The chicken.
Yeah. Okay,
so
that's
the fact of the
know.
Matter is that when you're talking about chicken soup, if you can get them to have the chicken soup without the chicken, they're probably going to do just as
that's
well.
That's not what they said on the Dr. Oz show.
Well, I'm not responsible for what they say on the Dr. Oz show.
Okay, so what are the most surprising secrets in here?
In Secrets of People Who Never Get Sick, I probably went through maybe 60 secrets before I picked out the ones that made the most sense, which were about 25 of them. The one that I thought was most surprising because it had a real intense scientific base was cold showers.
Ah.
Cold showers are really good for you. They're terrific for your metabolism. They increase the body's level of glutathione, which you can buy in a health food
yep.
store for like $40, or you can just take a cold shower.
Now, that I have never heard.
It's a great thing. However, as I said in the beginning, I am a participatory journalist. I did every one of these things, of course, except for the chicken soup. Cold showers is pretty much where I failed.
Yeah, I've
they're
never
really
liked
cold,
them. Never
know?
Liked them. And there was a guy a few months ago in the news who was into losing weight by sitting in a bath of ice cubes. Did you hear about
kind of
that?
I know I missed that one.
Yeah,
I guess you can find somebody who advocates everything,
anything.
But you really want to find somebody who advocates everything with some kind of scientific basis. What Secrets of People is all about is I found the people with the secrets. All of them had to be very healthy. But then I did a lot of research trying to figure out if these secrets are valid or not.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in that book that doesn't have at least some
okay.
The
one that's
basis.
Popping out to me is eating dirt.
Eating dirt. Absolutely. But I don't mean people should just go out and, like, you know, munch on some mud. What we're really talking about there is the immune system, and that if you don't expose your immune system to friendly microorganisms or even some unfriendly ones, it's like living in a bubble. Your immune system has nothing to do, and then you get your immune system, which is like a locked and loaded army, ready to move, and it has nothing to do, and then it fires back in on itself, and that's when you get autoimmune diseases.
Right.
And there's a lot of research that shows that children who grow up not exposed to going outdoors, not exposed to pets, not exposed to playing in the sandbox, are much more likely to develop asthma mm-hmm. and other autoimmune diseases as they grow older. So the issue is, don't force dirt down your kid's throat, but let kids, let people go outside, play in the dirt, get exposed to as much as possible, and let your immune system build up immunity so that it has something to do and doesn't turn back on you.
Right. Dirt is good.
Dirt is good.
Okay. now, I want to just say, there's a few other things in here that are popping out at me, but certainly these are all good things, but nobody gets out of this world alive, right?
Well, we don't know that for sure, but it's a best guess.
So, probably... you probably have a much greater chance of reducing risks of all of the nasty diseases that are plaguing us today if you follow most of these things,
mm-hmm.
which is great. So what's a blue zone?
Blue zones were discovered by a guy named Dan Buettner for National Geographic, and there are places in the world, I think there are five or maybe now six places that have been discovered where people, for reasons that we don't fully understand, live longer, healthier, and better lives than anywhere else. There's one in Japan, there's one in Italy, there's one in Greece, there's actually one in America, and there's one in Costa Rica. And so blue zones are nature's gift, geography's gift to health.
It has nothing to do with their diet or lifestyle.
Well, interestingly, if you actually look at the things they do in blue zones, they're very similar to the secrets of people who never get sick, which I was very happy to find out.
So are they like mountainous regions, so they get to walk a lot? And
They tend to be people who have a lot of... manual work, perhaps. They work mm-hmm. at farms or they're outdoors. They eat very healthy and local diets. They sleep very well. They probably take cold showers because there's no hot water.
I'm going to try that.
You know, I, as I said, I fell to the cold shower per se, but what I do now is I take my normal shower and then I let it get colder and colder and colder as a minute until it gets so cold I leave it. Mm-hmm. But that gives me at least some of the benefit of the cold water.
Right. I used to like to swim a lot in pools that weren't particularly hot, but cold showers, I don't know about that. Okay, so we just have a few minutes left. Here's one of your questions that I want to ask you. If people don't adopt a plant-based diet on a large scale, what will the world look like?
Well, you know, they're going back to that Big Ten theory of plant-based people. A lot of people come into it through health. A lot of people come into it through the ethical treatment of animals. But there's another group of people that come into it from the environment mm-hmm. because there have been more and more studies that show that sustainable meat eating doesn't exist if we continue to eat the kind of animal protein that we're doing.
Oh, I like that. Say that again. Sustainable meat
eating doesn't exist. I never listened to myself, so I don't really know what I just said, but I'm
that
glad
was good.
It's on record. But certainly plants are the future for our environment. And there have been a huge number of studies in the last few years that have shown that if we could get more people to switch over to a plant-based diet, all of these issues, well, not all of the issues of the environment, but a lot of them will be solved. And so what I'm discovering as somebody who came into it, as I said, through health, that the people I talk to who are young, they're not really, they're 18, they're invincible. Mm-hmm. They don't even think about health. They're perfect. And obviously some of them are interested in animals, but the environment is becoming very key to getting people to understand that this is a beneficial way to eat for your health and the health of the planet.
Right. The environment. It's just incredible to me. We have an answer here that will solve most of the world's problems with no investment, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not getting enough press. But
that's
Forks
why
Over
we're
Knives
here.
Is on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yep. And oddly, over the last few years, there have obviously been the paleo diet and all these other things that are antithetical mm-hmm. to everything that I personally believe in. But it's been very gratifying to see all the recent books that have been very plant-based, whether it's Skinny Bitch or Alicia Silverstone's book. There have been a lot of books that show that there are a lot of people out there who are listening and beginning to act.
Right. This is great. Well, Gene, thank you.
Thank you.
It's such a pleasure to meet you. I'm so glad I have this book, The Secrets of People Who Never Get
Sick. Yeah, try some of them.
Great. And a lot of luck to you. Thank you for joining me. Do you have any websites to tell me about?
Oh, yeah, secretsofpeople.com.
Secretsofpeople.com.
And Forks Over Knives has a website.
There we go, Forks Over Knives. Well, I can't wait to see Fourchette sur...
Couteau.
Fourchette sur couteau. That's
Please.
French
C'est ça.
For forks over knives. Thank you for joining me.
Au revoir.
I'm Karen Hartglass, and you've been listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me. And next week, gosh, we have Tracy McGirder, who wrote Greens by Any Means, and Marissa Wolfson Miller, who has the new documentary, Vegucated. Thanks for listening. Have a delicious week.